So hello, everyone. My name is Adam Sabash. I use he, him as pronouns. I'm an assistant scientist in the MC&G department and a member of the Workplace Climate Committee. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to join us today. It's really a record turnout for us for one of these community events. And I really appreciate everyone taking the time to be here. So maybe you're here because you want to get more involved in diversity and inclusion efforts at HUI and in Woods Hole, or because you, like me, want to be a more effective ally, or because you also, like me, have just been overwhelmed with the news and don't know where to start with it all. There are strong parallels between the stories of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and countless other Black Americans in this country. There are strong parallels between their stories and the stories of Black and underrepresented minority members of our very own community. I began organizing this event because these parallels need to be called out explicitly, because only when we see them, recognize them, and acknowledge them can we start dealing with them as a community and as an institution. In this community, you will listen to myself, Chrissy Hernandez, and Kalia Griffin give a majority of the presentation. You will listen to voices from the Black community in Woods Hole, voices that agreed to be heard because of the trust they placed in us to share their stories. You will hear statements from Mark Abbott, our president, and Joel Yopis, the co-chair of the Committee on Diversity and Inclusion. And then you will all get the opportunity to talk and discuss openly in smaller breakout groups. There are many people, other people involved in this event who you won't see on your screens today, many of whom are members of the Workplace Climate Committee and the Committee on Diversity and Inclusion. Max Saito, Vita Green, Dina Pandya, Annette Govindarajan, Gwyneth Packard, Stephanie Madsen, Matt Barton, Craig LaPlante, Kathy Patterson, Val Smirnoff, and Kathy Benjamin all donated their valuable time and effort to making this event be as smooth and effective as possible. So a big thank you to all of you who made this happen on such short notice. Another big thank you to everyone who's attending this meeting today. We also have Mark Abbott and Rick Murray and a number of other senior administration members in attendance today. So thank you both. And thank you all administration to be here who are here today. A number of the trustees are also joining us. So thank you all for showing your support for this event and for your interest in tackling the problems of systemic racism in our community and at HUI. A few logistical notes on the meeting before we get into it. Please keep your video off until we go into breakout groups later in the event. We'll tell you when you can turn those on. The speeches that you'll hear are being recorded. We encourage people to speak freely and openly in the discussion section in breakout rooms, and so those breakout groups will not be recorded. Although many of our communities place a strong focus on small group discussion, a large portion of this event will be spent listening to others. However, we encourage you to use the chat feature in an engaged and respectful way. Throughout the session, we ask everyone to please be present and practice good Zoom etiquette. This means turning off other screens, giving your attention to the meeting at hand, and when it comes to breakout rooms, please mute yourself if you are not speaking to cut down on interference. Finally, we have a lot to cover, as you might imagine, given the subject material. So this event is scheduled to last until 3:30. If you planned for this to be 1 hour and have to leave at that point, that's totally fine. And we hope that no matter how long you stay, you bring this discussion with you into the future. I'm now going to hand over the presentation to Chrissy Hernandez to start things off.
Thanks, Adam. So if we could go to the next slide, please. It is important to understand the long-standing history that has brought us to reside on this land and to seek to understand our place within that history. Land acknowledgments do not exist in a past tense or historical context. Colonialism is a current, ongoing process, and we need to build our mindfulness for our present participation. We acknowledge that we are gathering, living, and working on the traditional and unceded territories of the Wampanoag people. The Wampanoag people are still here. still working to steward their land and still proudly preserving their cultural traditions. Since the arrival of Europeans in Massachusetts, non-Indian governments have broken agreements and steadily stolen land from the Wampanoag. We celebrate the recent legal victory of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe to maintain their lands in trust, a battle that they have been fighting since 2018 against an arbitrary and capricious decision by the U.S. Department of the Interior. We invite you to learn more about the further requirements for protecting tribal lands for the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe by visiting the tribal website. Next slide, please. Thank you for being here. I'm Chrissy Hernandez, a PhD student in biology. I've recently rotated out of my position as student rep to the Workplace Climate Committee, and I've helped plan a lot of the communities over the past few years. We're here today to discuss anti-racism work, the process of shifting ideas and policies to increase equity between races. Recent examples of police brutality, as well as the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, disproportionately affect and kill Black people. While we still believe that there are many dimensions of diversity that are valuable and many identities that are underrepresented in ocean science institutions, today we are focusing on the experiences of Black people in Falmouth and at Hui. Black lives matter, and it is an urgent issue. The event that you are participating in today has benefited from input from a diverse group of people, including several members of our community who are Black. However, the faces you'll see giving the presentations will not be Black. This is intentional. The responsibility for dismantling systemic oppression that results from white supremacy falls to those of us who benefit from that system. Our colleagues and friends who are Black have been fighting the system for their whole lives. Their voices and influence run through this event, from its title to its structure to the work they've done in educating those of us who are speaking today. Next slide, please. Police brutality is a cancer, but it is not an isolated ailment. It is part of a constellation of disease that we can't look away from. It is the ultimate price paid in lives for the racist policies and ideas that continue to flourish in our country. We will now take a moment of silence to honor the lives of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Tony McDade, and countless others whose names have not made it into the headlines. Thank you. In the words of a recent memorial post on the Black Lives Matter website, George Floyd, we remember you, we honor you, and we fight for you. Your name will continue to be a rallying cry as we transform the world. Next slide, please. The rest of this event is organized around a framework developed by Rachel Cargill. She teaches that the formula for allyship and meaningful change is critical knowledge plus radical empathy plus intentional action. In this next section, I will share some knowledge with you. After that, we will practice empathy by listening to recorded stories of experiences of Black people here in Falmouth. Then we'll hear about actions that we can take as individuals, as employees of Hui, and as an institution. And finally, we'll have some time for small group discussions. Rachel Cargill says that radical empathy goes beyond understanding another's experiences, that radical empathy, quote, calls you to hold yourself accountable for how you play into the pain of others. We are all at different points in this journey, and we won't get anywhere if defensiveness causes us to shut down and disengage. Please meet yourself where you are today. Work on listening, hearing, and understanding, and then keep working tomorrow. I am by no means an expert on anti-racism, so I have tried to draw primarily from Black experts in preparing the following slides. This presentation represents my own ongoing process of learning and unlearning and I hope that you will hold me accountable for any mistakes I make along the way. Next slide, please. Anti-racism is a value that we can choose to uphold moment to moment. I recently started reading Ibram Kendi's 2019 book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. And the most powerful thing I've found so far is his analogy that racist and anti-racist are like sticky name tags that we can put on and take off. These are not words that describe something fundamental about us, but words that describe individual actions, ideas, policies, and behaviors. He writes about how the word racist has become equated with bad person, such that people who participate in white supremacy groups, who believe in a racial hierarchy, claim to be not racist. But in this reframing, to be anti-racist is to hold and promote ideas and policies that increase or maintain equity between races. To be anti-racist means that we work to unlearn ideas about intrinsic differences between races. It means that we believe in the anti-racist idea that history, laws, policies, and systemic oppression are responsible for the inequality we observe in our communities and society. Next slide, please. Today, we're working on listening and hearing. We know that sometimes people come to community discussions with lots of ideas of what they want to say, and that's great. But we need to listen and actually hear what others are saying. Listening without hearing might involve being quiet while the other person talks, nodding your head, and then going ahead with what you had planned to say once it's your turn. Listening and hearing means that we listen to their words and we hear the meaning behind them. We put all of our attention on what they're saying, and we try to actually understand what they've said before we speak. What we say next might be a direct response to what they say or a question to help us understand what they mean. This distinction is particularly important when someone tells us that our words, our actions, or institutionalized policies have caused them harm. Next slide, please. When I think about what privilege is, I like to use the headwinds-tailwinds asymmetry. This metaphor really works for me because I live near the bike path and the winds get really strong along the open stretch near the Quissett campus. And when I have a headwind, I'm so aware of it. I'm pedaling so hard, feeling so frustrated at my hard work and slow speed, and I feel really entitled to complain. However, when I have a tailwind, I tend to just think, wow, I'm so strong today. My privilege consists of various tailwinds that I've benefited from throughout my life. I'm still pedaling super hard, but I'm getting a lot further, a lot faster than when I have a headwind. There are lots of types of privilege: racial, economic, physical ability, gender, and much more. When I talk specifically about white privilege, I refer to the various positive assumptions people might make about me based on my skin color. And to be clear, holding white privilege does not erase other hardships I've faced, but rather it clarifies that my hardships have not been due to my skin color. Next slide, please. This is a comic by Tom Hunt, which I got from Twitter. It's about the All Lives Matter response to statements that Black Lives Matter. And I'll read what the person holding a Black Lives Matter sign says. "Of course, all lives matter, dude. The point of the phrase is that Black lives are being treated as expendable by the police and the government that employs them. If someone says, 'Save the rainforest,' you don't respond, 'Actually, save all forests,' do you? Just because we need to save the rainforest doesn't mean other forests have no value. It's just one needs our focus right now because the situation has gotten out of control." There are two reasons that I really like this comic. First, it ties the racial and social justice issues that are currently in the news to environmental conservation issues. Environmental issues and climate issues are social and racial justice issues. It is, in fact, all connected, and I like that both of those topics are here in this comic. The other thing I really like, the most important thing in this comic, is that the person who said all lives matter actually changes their mind. They listen to the analogy, they integrate it into their understanding of the world, and they decide to stand alongside the Black Lives Matter protester. This is powerful, and it's part of what we're asking you all to do. Let's give ourselves and each other space to change our minds and forgiveness for past mistakes so that we all have room to grow. Next slide, please. We are complicit in these systems. HUI, science, and academia do not exist outside of these systems. We are raised in a racist society, and its lessons live in all of us. I like this recent quote from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Racism in America is like dust in the air. It seems invisible, even if you're choking on it, until you let the sun in. Then you see it's everywhere. As long as we keep shining that light, we have a chance of cleaning it wherever it lands. If you're sitting here and thinking, I already know this, or if you're thinking, oh, but none of my colleagues would ever say something racist, I promise that you're wrong. There's always more to learn. And the more we demonstrate that we care about the impact of our words and actions rather than focusing on defending our intentions, the more our Black colleagues and friends will feel that they can point out our missteps. We're not going to be done learning after this week. Being anti-racist is a lifelong commitment. Next slide, please. And so, for us to create meaningful change in ourselves, in our communities, and in our institutions, we have to choose actions that are sustainable. This week, I've been reflecting a lot on what actions I can implement for the long term. In this moment of urgency and intensity, we might find that we aren't getting a lot of science done. I'm not. And I can't keep that up. The process of transforming scientific workplaces into more just and equitable spaces has to be considered part of our jobs. It has to happen consistently by examining various decisions and habits we have. How does your group run meetings to be sure that everyone feels heard? How do we write job ads and review applications? Who gets to access the results of research, including scientific papers and outreach materials? I want to close with the idea that we need all of us to be in this together. Everyone will have different things to contribute. We're at different places in our learning on anti-racism and in our careers. Regardless of the role you take on, it is important that you engage in self-care to avoid burnout. The idea of radical self-care means that you get to be a whole person, and it includes so many things: rest, listening to others, having fun, forgiving ourselves for our mistakes, holding ourselves accountable, eating enough, sleeping enough. Take care of yourself so you can keep showing up. For Black people and folks from other minoritized identities, for our HUI community, for the ocean, it's all connected. Now I'll hand it over to Kalia.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for being here. Thank you, Chrissy, for laying out some foundations of anti-racism language and work to build our critical knowledge. My name is Kalia. I go by she, her, hers pronouns. I'm an engineer here at HUI in the Acoustic Communications Group. In addition, I'm on the Woods Hole Diversity Advisory Committee and was recently asked to help co-lead the HUI events subgroup of the Committee for Diversity and Inclusion, which is how I came to be speaking with you today. Listen Up is an ongoing series of events led mainly by Anjali Scott Price and myself, with help from others on the DAC events team, like Amy Vansize, Sharon Luke, and Lindsay Scott. Haley Fager and Sarah Mises-Tan recorded and produced most of the audio content you will hear today. We began Listen Up last year with the goal to create a space where underrepresented voices are heard and where listeners are challenged to think beyond their own experiences in the community. We have so far hosted 3 hour-long listening sessions where we have focused on listening to people of color's experiences with racism in the CAPE community. And we plan to continue our in-person listening sessions in the fall. In planning today's event, we felt it was important to amplify Black voices and stories from our own community. So we are bringing you an abridged version of Listen Up. We want it to be abundantly clear to you that the stories being told in national headlines right now, proving again and again that Black Americans are not given the freedom they deserve in this country, is very much happening here in Woods Hole. At the same time as we share these stories, we need to recognize that we, largely white people hearing these stories today, are undeserving of them. These courageous Black voices do not owe us their stories, and they are not obligated to teach us. I hope we can all listen from a point of gratitude that these Black community members are willing to share their stories at all with us. If you are a Black community member listening, I know it's an especially hard time, and these stories might be triggering to you. I'm not asking you to listen to these stories now unless you choose to. After I stop talking, I'm going to mute myself and turn off my video. The stories will last for 15 minutes. If you choose to mute your computer or leave the room, that's okay. If you want to rejoin, you'll know that the story piece is over when myself or Adam is back on the screen again. I hope through our listening, we can at least make a start at affirming your story, but I don't expect that. If anything that I've said makes you uncomfortable or upset, please feel free to reach out to me. One courageous Black individual in our community is Angie Scott Price. She's a longstanding member of the Diversity Advisory Committee. She is an incredible racial justice advocate, and I don't feel like our community will ever be able to thank her in a way she deserves for her work. I say this because she deserves the credit, and because today I'll try and fill her very large shoes and give her and our other Black organizers a much needed break. Normally, a community member of color would take the helm in sharing in the voices of color. But we've discussed this, and we're making an exception today to relieve some of the burden that our Black organizers often take on. As Chrissy said, the responsibility for dismantling systemic racism lies with those who have benefited from it. With that, let me share with you the ground rules for the listening session. Next slide, please. In order to ensure that we create a safe space for these stories to be heard, we have basic expectations for the listeners. These stories have been gathered through the past year through friendships, partnerships, and mentorships that were all based on trust. We did not ask for these stories out of the blue or just when racism was in the headlines. With that, do not go to the first Black friend or colleague you see after hearing these stories and ask for theirs. Do not ask them to relive their racial trauma for your educational benefit. You can find many more stories from people of color in the resources document that we are sending out so that you can hear from more Black people from this community who have already shared their stories. We are about to hear real stories about real people's experiences from our own community, and that means that you might recognize their voice and you might recognize the story. But we are sharing these stories anonymously to protect their identities, and we ask that you keep them anonymous. There are silences that are 20 seconds long in between the stories. They are meant for you to reflect. If they are uncomfortable, that is okay. We ask for you to sit in that discomfort. Please respect these stories. That means that they are not up for debate or critique. We will not minimize them. We will only validate them. Please practice this affirmation as you listen. Now, if you are choosing to listen to these stories, we are asking that you now give them your full attention for the next 15 minutes. So let us affirm in one way through our listening that Black Lives Matter. Next slide, please.
You have to act a certain way. You know what I mean? You can't be you. You can't do it. You have to be the mask that you have to be around white people so you don't scare them, because you're scary. As far as white people, you have a choice whether you want to act this way or that way. You know, you get to decide. We have to, our timing has to be impeccable. You have to have the greatest timing in the world. You have to know what time you can act like this and what time you can't. It's not always white privilege, oh, you have this money. Oh, you're privileged, you got the silver spoon, da 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 da. Because you could be the poorest white person in the world, but you have the privilege of being a civilian. You get to choose when you can act this way and when you can't, when you can say this and when you can't. You have emotional rights that I don't get to have. And as far as going up here on Cape Cod, there's many situations I have to walk away from. If you haven't noticed, Cape Cod is mainly white people dominated. A lot of different kinds of people come down for the summer. But when the summer goes, it's just five black people in the high school. Like five, six people, black people in the high school. And in every class, in almost every class, I'm the only black person in my classroom. And many young kids my age have an idea of what it is to be black, I feel like. It's, you know, the rappers, you know what I'm saying? The rappers with big chains and stuff. And like acting a certain way is what black is to them. And a lot of kids in the high school try to take that on and be that. And they expect me to be flattered or me to, you know, welcome that and joke with that and, you know, be a part of that. And I can't do that. Not just because I feel, you know, disrespected, but I can't do that because if I was to act a certain way, the way that they're acting, I would get perceived differently by my teachers. I would be stereotyped automatically. I can't talk a certain way. I can't say certain things. It'll just be like, word to your mother. You know what I'm saying? Like, they'll say that. Or whenever I come around, they'll play trap music. I can't act like that. And so sometimes you just have to suck it up. You just have to swallow it and realize where you are. You're in school. What are you doing this for? What is the purpose of this? How long are you going to be here for? Everything you do has to be about a bigger picture. I can't be like, what are you talking about? Shut up. Sit, yo. If you don't get out my face, I can't do that. I have to solely focus on what the teacher is saying at that moment and not hear anybody. It has to be about me and this purpose and what are you doing this for? You know what I mean? So that's some of the things that you have to walk away from.
Huh. Wow.
Okay.
So there are white folks in Woods Hole in Cape Cod who don't think they got racism there?
Look, I get really exhausted when I go to quote unquote progressive areas and what I am constantly confronted with the white folk I interact with is them stumbling all over themselves not to appear racist. And look, if you're not racist, you ain't gotta try. You can just like exist and interact with me. Look, y'all got plenty of racists. I am a gigantic 6 foot tall black person, and y'all got plenty of racists in Cape Cod. You got plenty of racists in Woods Hole. The thing is, I am a black person. I know how to navigate those spaces, and I know how to deal with multitudes of racism. And the progressive kind is a fairly insidious one, because a lot of progressive white folk think that unless they are actively racist, quote unquote, you know, like they're out in the streets being like, hang black people, or, you know, we support these detention / concentration camps on our border. If they're not actively out there saying stuff like that or doing stuff like that, they think they're not racist. But racism is the looks you give people, black folks, when they enter public spaces, private public spaces, that quick questioning, like, are you supposed to be here? Yes, I'm supposed to be here. It's the United States of America. I can go anywhere I want. It's in those moments. It's when you're actually trying to do your job and you know you are a black person in a predominantly white area. I take precautions as an audio producer, as a journalist. I have to email people first. And even, you know, people will be like, oh, you know, you're a producer. Just go up and talk to people. They'll talk to you. That is advice for white people. If you are a black or brown person in Cape Cod or Woods Hole, there is no such thing as just walking up to some random white person and being like, hello, can I interview you? That's not how life works. Okay, we have to take precautions to interact with the white public in Woods Hole and Cape Cod. The same precautions, mind you, that I take in the South. And so, you know, the thing is,
as a black person in the United States or globally, you get so used to the minute microaggressions, the things that people do every single day to slightly denigrate you by pretending, but can still maintain some air of, well, we didn't mean it that way. I don't care about your intent. Your actions matter because your actions have consequences. And so I know how to deal with that type of white person. I know how to deal with white people in general. And the thing is, look, if we had to call out every single thing white people did that was racist on a daily basis, I wouldn't function. I wouldn't live. And so I make the choice to be like, I don't have time for this. Like, I could have been in Cape Cod. I could have been in Woods Hole, step into all these white folk who just say the most ridiculous things. Like, what does it even mean to look at a black person and say, in Woods Hole, I never would have known you were black until I saw you because I heard you talk. What does that mean? It's there. There are plenty of white racists in Cape Cod. I met plenty of them. It might have been you. you never know. There is this idea in Cape Cod and Woods Hole that because they know the right words to say or they know what they're not supposed to do, then that's enough. That's not enough. That's not enough. You saying hello to me when I walk into your store, even though you follow me around your store, is not enough because that's racist. You looking at me and having conversations with me about how not racist you are is racist because you want a pat on the back. You want accolades for just being a decent person. How about you go decently tell other white people how not to be racist? Okay, please do that because y'all got plenty of racism in that community and it is shocking. You know what? Let me not say that. It's not shocking that folks don't see it. It's the same way men don't see their misogyny and so someone points it out, but it's there. It is an undercurrent. It is the way you interact with people. It is the way you don't interact with people. It's the way you shut people down or don't. It's the way you open up spaces in your home or your businesses or you don't. It is the way you are welcoming and smile and wave at people and then don't wave and smile at the black or brown person who is also there. Like, look, Cape Cod is one of them places like in the South. There are certain places as a black person in the United States of America that I will not go to because it is not safe for me. Cape Cod is the same. Cape Cod is the same type of space where I'm like, I'm not going to Woods Hole if I don't absolutely have to and I don't have black or brown people with me because it's too much. It's too much having to be like, I'm the only black person here and some white person is going to come up and talk to me about Obama every time. I'm the only black person here and someone's going to come up and talk to me about, well, I kind of like hip hop. I'm like, what? Like, what are you doing? All that being said, y'all hands are not as clean as you think they are. You are not as progressive as you think you are. You have not done as much as you think you have done. Because you're not out there on the streets during the work, okay? Whiteness is protected. That means put your white bodies on the line. That means put your white minds on the line. That means go toe-to-toe with your white friends and your white family members in the same way I go toe-to-toe with men who step out of line. Y'all have to do the same thing. I think that's it. I think that's all I got. All right.
I had an instance where someone literally just bold-faced asked me, why are you here? When the town is predominantly white and it's going to stay predominantly white because the locals do not make people of color or people who look different feel welcome, that's where the issue lies. The town is white, whatever. But when people of color try to move in and try to be a part of that community and the people who already live there make you feel like they don't want you there, like, why would you stay? Why would you want to be in an environment where people ask you why you're here or where people, I had instances where I was in shops getting things, people did not look me in my eye. I went to a store in Woods Hole where I handed the cash into the cashier's hand. She counted out my change and then I put my hand out so for her to put the change back in my hand and she put the change on the counter next to my hand. There's no reason, what's wrong with my hand? You don't want to touch my hand? Like, I don't understand that. There's so many instances where you're walking down the street, when you interact with people, like people either stare or they don't look you in the eye. I'm at counters ordering things, and the cashiers, the baristas, do not look me into my eye. They do not smile when they're talking to me. And I know it's because of what I look like, because I travel with people who are white and they get looked in the eye and they get smiled at. Like, you can't tell me that these things are not racially motivated. It's one thing to have a town that's predominantly white. It's a completely different conversation when the predominantly white people in that town are making you feel like they don't want you there, like they think of you as less than, or like, it's okay, I don't have to smile at you when I'm serving you. When you have a town that's predominantly white and you're the only person experiencing these things, it can also make you feel like you're going crazy. Like, I know I'm not crazy. I'm aware that I'm a person of color. But I've never been made more aware of my blackness or of my otherness than when I was living in Woods Hole. Every single day I was reminded of the fact that I was black just from like walking down the street. I couldn't walk down the street and get a cup of coffee without being reminded of the fact that I don't look like everybody else in that town. And that's a really, really sucky feeling, and nobody wants to stay in that.
When we came here last fall, we were looking for housing. So went online everywhere, did the usual thing, found a place. My husband talked to this woman several times over the phone, via email. So we came up and we said, hey, we're gonna be in town. Can we come look at this space? And she's like, yeah, you can come look at it. Just wanna let you know the current tenants are getting ready to move out. And so the place is a little bit of a mess, but we'd like you to, you know, just keep that in mind. No problem. So we went and looked at the space, and it was fine. It was very obvious that people were moving, and that seemed to be it. We went on our way, and relatively soon after, I don't remember, it might have been a day or so, she emails and says, oh, I'm really sorry, my current tenants have decided to stay. Can't rent to you because they're staying. They've been great tenants and all that stuff. Okay, well, you know, thanks for letting us know. And so we went back to the same sites we were on before, and saw the same place posted for the same dates for the same price from the same person. The only thing that changed was, or the only new information that she had about us was that we were black. Nothing else changed, no, dates didn't change. That was the only thing that was different. And so to us, that was pretty obvious that it was racial discrimination. I know some people of color who have had really traumatic experiences in Woods Hole and Falmouth. And so they don't want to come back. They don't even want to talk about coming back, which is devastating, because I think of Woods Hole as this amazing first-class science. And there are great scientists and engineers who will not come back here. And so we as a community are missing out on them. And they as a community are missing out on us because of experiences that they've had. And that's really sad to think about. Yeah, my friends from college are like, I mean, yeah, it's a nice looking place, but it sounds like you're going through a lot on a regular basis and you're constantly doing things. Like, do you ever take a break? And not really, because the work needs to be done all the time, but I do have my days and my moments where I don't leave the house because I am so frustrated by something that has been said or done that I'm like, I don't want to see another person who is not a person of color. Trying to talk to non-people of color is incredibly difficult and frustrating. When something happens, and I try to have a conversation with someone about, you know, how this may make me feel or whatnot, it is very quick response to want to minimize or say, oh, that's not really that big of a deal, or to deflect and say, well, that's probably not what they meant. I think people who genuinely want increased diversity and inclusion here need to do some work themselves. And not just, what am I going to participate in? What organization am I going to join? Where can I send some money? I mean, do some reflecting, do some research. I just wish that people would think about what they actually want to do. Do you actually want to be progressive? Do you actually want to be anti-racist? Do you actually want to be thoughtful? Because this all starts with you. Like, you have to think about it. You have to listen to it. You have to be uncomfortable with it if anything's going to happen.
Next slide, please. So, thank you everyone for listening. These stories are hard to hear and we can't understand how hard they are to live. I urge you, as you reflect personally on these stories, to affirm what they say and do not debate, question, minimize, or critique any of their experiences. Also know that these are only a few of the stories of racial injustices that have happened here in Woods Hole. Please continue to listen to stories, understand ideas and experiences that challenge your perceptions, and reflect deeply within yourself to own your role in systems of oppression that created these stories. At the very end of these presentations, there's going to be the breakout room section. We have prepared prompts for the breakout sessions that do not have to do with discussing these stories, and this is intentional. Please do not use your breakout time to discuss these stories. Your reflection on these stories should be internal and offline. Last, you should know that although I've spent many hours this week preparing how to present these stories and getting feedback from friends, colleagues, and racial justice advocates in our town, I know I could have messed up. If I did, and you want to talk about it or want me to listen, please just reach out to me. Now I will turn over to Adam, who will talk about getting involved with intentional activism. Thank you.
All right, now I want everyone to close their eyes. Everyone close your eyes. Picture your colleagues and peers here at HUI. Do you have the same skin color as them? Are you the same gender as them? Now picture your supervisor, picture your department chair. Do they have the same skin color as you? Are they the same gender as you? Now imagine the people you are responsible for here at HUI. Do they look like you? Let us now shift perspective. How often are you reminded of your own skin color, race, or gender when interacting with your colleagues here? How often are you reminded of your own skin color, race, or gender when interacting with your boss? How about when interacting with your employees? With the security guard in Clark or Redfield? With the cashier at the grocery store? With the police officer sitting in the car next to you at a stoplight? Next slide, please. Now you can open your eyes. Many of us do not think about race or gender simply because we all look very much alike. The statistics of HUI's gender and racial makeup show that sameness in stark detail. So let's just, we can all look at these statistics and take them in for a second. This homogeneity is not just because Black people do not want to move here. It is because the same systemic racism found in Minneapolis or New York City or Los Angeles or Boston is present in our own community. We have heard it from our own community members, and it makes them feel uncomfortable, unwelcome, and afraid. In fact, they do move here, and they feel this way so strongly that they leave. Next slide, please. These same racist systems are active throughout the entire field of geosciences. In a paper from 2018, Emily Cooperdock, who is a former postdoc here, she's now at USC, and Rachel Bernard demonstrated that the number of non-white PhDs in geoscience has not increased in over 40 years. To make the point again, this lack of diversity is a result of racist policies and structures that are woven into every aspect of our society. We were told as much in great detail by the Woods Hole Diversity Report that we commissioned several years ago. The picture we are painting is grim. Next slide. As this slide shows, we are at the very beginning of this journey. In fact, we may not have not even reached base camp yet. However, I do have hope. Hui is not and has never been afraid to tackle pervasive problems. I would argue that water is probably the most pervasive substance on Earth, and we are a world leader in the field of oceanography. I believe that we can put in the emotional and physical work to make our community welcoming and accepting to everyone. With that, I turn the spotlight over to Mark Abbott, who will give us a short statement on his administration's approach to addressing systemic racism in oceanography and at Hui.
Thanks very much, Adam, and thanks, Kalia and Chrissy. Very, very powerful presentations. I know you put a lot of work into it. Much, much appreciated. What Chrissy had to say, and Kalia and Adam all had to say, is this is a hard problem. These are, but we're all in this together. And it's not just the institution, but it's us as individuals. And we really have to always remember the message that we're trying to get across, work on the every element of injustice, no matter where it is, at the local level, interpersonal, or as an institution. And one of a recent book I read last year by Amy Edmondson from the Harvard Business School talks about creating a fearless organization, one that really sets the stage for its purpose, one that invites participation and acknowledges gaps, that it practices inquiry and it responds productively to all ideas and all people, that it expresses appreciation and it sanctions violations of that. That's something I got asked last year at the Naval Academy. You know, was higher ed a fearless organization? I said, in a lot of ways, it's real fearful. It's hard for students, it's hard for assistant professors or assistant scientists or people of color. Someone who thinks differently or has a different experience is often not welcomed and invited to participate. And that's part of, I think, what Adam's curve showed. It's not just a matter of making it, you know, a great workplace. We've got to think of new ways, new ideas to go out and attract and engage people to come in and join us on this journey to understand the ocean and to be part of a research community. I think that's, you know, Meg Tyvee and her team have worked tirelessly for years, and you're seeing some payoff. You know, 2/3 of the summer students fellows this year for underrepresented groups. We've got to keep that up. There are things the institution can do, but I think more importantly, it ties back to what Chrissy said. We're all in this, and we all have to look at our own selves and our own actions. And I want to create that institution that enables those ideas and takes those concrete actions. Summer short term, we're looking at, you know, rethinking how we do hiring and recruitment, how we evaluate impact, so we don't keep, it's easy to hire people that look like you or think like you. And that makes for a weaker organization. And we really want to work hard on that. So I don't want to take much more time than that. I know a lot of ideas are going to come out from the breakout groups, but we're all in this, and let's move it forward and climb up that hill that Adam had in his chart. Thanks, Adam. Back to you.
Thank you, Mark, for your thoughts so in the spirit of grassroots efforts, how can you all get involved? We've compiled a list of resources in the handout with readings, podcasts, social media accounts, and local groups to get involved with if you're interested in engaging in other ways. I want to spend this time not focusing on those because I think you can read them and find what speaks to you. But I'll spend this time outlining some general guiding principles for us all to follow as we start to become more effective allies. Next slide, please. My first point is this. It will take emotional and physical effort to make this happen. Our efforts will at times make us uncomfortable. When you find yourself in an uncomfortable situation, remind yourself of the stories we heard today about how uncomfortable and unwelcome Black and underrepresented people feel in our community every single day. It is the least we can do to feel even a fraction of that discomfort. Second, other people will not do this work for you. Do not expect change to come because of what you are seeing or reading in the news. Do not expect change because you went to the protest on Wednesday and all of your friends were there. Do not expect change because JP students and junior faculty are speaking up. Ask yourself, what am I doing? What more will I do? Being an ally requires ownership of this issue, and ownership means taking real intentional action. That's not to say that we cannot learn from others. We must listen to and be mindful of what Black and underrepresented voices are telling us about where our efforts are needed and where they are unappreciated. This approach extends to the ways in which we interact with media sources too. So just as in science, cite your sources. We must acknowledge all the hard work, most of it done by Black people, that got us to where we are today. Finally, this work doesn't have to be difficult. I hope we all appreciate now the power and privilege many of us as white presenting people have. In Chrissy's words, we have a strong tailwind helping us to do this work. Use your position of power and privilege, whatever it might be, to be effective at your level. What do I mean by this? If you're organizing a seminar series or a meeting, invite diverse speakers and make it easy for them to attend. If you are responsible for hiring people, recruit diverse candidates and hire them. If you are responsible for a budget, devote a portion of that budget to welcome and retain Black and underrepresented people into our community. The time for talking about these issues has passed. Now is the time to get it done. Every one of us needs to put in the effort and do the work, big or small, to bring about the change that we all know is needed. We can do this, and we're all part of the solution. With that, I hope you're all fired up and ready to learn about how to get engaged here on campus. Before I hand things over to Joel Yopis, I just want to say again, you know, we're all learning in this together. I'm happy to receive any comments that anyone has about things I might have said and the ways that we're approaching this and that I approach this this meeting too. So with that, I'm going to hand this presentation over to Joel, who's going to talk about the CDI and their new working groups.
Next slide, please. Hi, everyone. My name is Joel Yopis. I am one of the co-chairs on our newly reformed and newly revamped Committee for Diversity and Inclusion. My other co-chair is Gwyneth Packard. And last fall, we reformed our committee. We have 11 members. And I'm just throwing up some screenshots here of our website, which is where you can go to find all this information about us. All you have to do is Google HUI CDI. This is our homepage. Next slide, please. We also have our charter up here, but this third tab is our member list. And next slide, please. We've been meeting every month, and we post all our minutes on this website here. You can find out what we've been talking about, what our plans are. And we also have a resources page, next slide, where you can go to learn almost anything you want about this topic. And we're adding to this list immensely. We're gonna probably structure it in sort of a way of I'm really new to D&I efforts, where do I start? Or you know, you really know what you're doing, here are some more advanced reading list. What I do want to emphasize it right now is, next slide please, is the structure of our committee is we were sort of tasked with having 11 committee members from different departments, different groups, different ladders, levels. And we said, you know, that's great, but there's so much to do. How are we going to do as much as possible? And we decided to take a working group structure where we have five working groups that are tasked with very, very much narrower specific goals. And those are essentially going to be subcommittees. And they'll be led by CDI members, but we are asking you to be a part of those working groups. So all you have to do is go to our website and email these individuals if you're interested in participating in any of these working groups. And any of them would work out for you. We are particularly in need of people for the resources and metrics group. So if you really want to contribute, but you're a little bit shy, that's the group for you probably. So I really appreciate it. I appreciate the administration's support for this committee. And I really am impressed with this community tea today. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Joel, for that. So we've reached the portion of the event where we're gonna open the discussion to breakout groups. So we have 50 breakout groups. So we're probably gonna end up with a few, I don't know how many people per group, we're aiming for 6 or 7. In the groups, we ask that everyone be respectful and keep the discussion on the topic of race. But please, again, do not discuss the stories that we listened to earlier. In the groups, we ask that everyone, so before making a comment, think about who this comment serves. Have I already spoken? Should I be making room for someone else to be heard? Any conversation in these rooms is to be treated as confidential and anonymous. And once we're in the breakout rooms, please introduce yourselves to the room, give your preferred pronouns if you wish, and say why you're attending this community. Next, we're asking the groups to identify someone who will be responsible for taking notes and submitting the Google form, which has the group's kind of main points and prompts and thoughts back to us. Oh, great. Chrissy just posted the link to that form in the chat, so you can go there and get it. Okay, this feedback is really important for our committees to generate an action plan moving forward and for us as organizers to learn from this event too. We provided a series of prompts to promote discussion and you can all take a quick photo of the screen or I believe it's in the handout. The prompts are in the handout as well. And they're in the Google form. So there are many ways that you can get them. Feel free to use these prompts as a jumping off point, and we hope they're useful for you all to think about how to contribute to lasting change at HUI and in Woods Hole. All right, so let's send everyone to breakout groups. We're going to give everyone half an hour to discuss.